When Valentine returned to the house to exterminate the Grey Ones, Anka got his pick of weapons that night. He examined the various rifles and eventually selected one with a black-stained handle. The Grogs liked the butts of their weapons to be gnarled and burled. This one was no exception.
I must shape this before it truly suits me, but it is a good gun.
He also pored over the finger-sized bullets, sliding the formidable-looking rounds he selected into his bandolier. Valentine lined up the Grog bodies according to Anka's instructions, placing them on their backs, with the left palm over the heart, the right palm across the nose and mouth, weapons laid to either side. Another patrol from the Wrist Ring clan, upon finding the bodies, might pause for the proper ceremonies. They would seed the bodies with the correct decomposing fungi, and perhaps be too busy mourning their dead to pursue.
You men angered the Grey Ones when you just burned their corpses. They think you killed them not only in this world, but denied them the passage to the Heroes' Woods their bravery merits. Better to leave them to lie on the battlefield untouched.
Never heard the expression, when in Rome? They wouldn't have their rights ignored if they weren't here in the first place.
That's the fault of another generation.
Valentine thought of the wilds of western Missouri. Wolf teams could reach Omaha, find paths that more powerful forces could follow.
By working together, some of that generation's legacy might be wiped away.
The Golden Ones have tasted the fruits of their alliance with Kerr. We found them rotten. Then came the Twisted Cross. Many would be ready to join your fight.
I wish we could find explosives more powerful than these grenades.
Valentine rooted through the Grey One's equipment.
We could hit the Twisted Cross in their own backyard.
I can help you in that. There are men in the old market who can obtain anything you need.
To Valentine, anything pre-2022 was old. But this part of the city, set against the river, was aged even by old world standards as he understood them. The closely packed, square brick buildings had new windows where they weren't simply closed by masonry. The west and south faces of many still showed burnt black smudges, lingering evidence of the airbursts that destroyed the city and the old Air Force base to the south. They came to the district walking along the Missouri. The river rolled south past the city, redolent of silt and algae, with only a hint of the sewage Valentine smelled from many of the old storm drains. In the distance, a rust-colored dredger worked between the pillars of the rail bridge, bringing up masses of mud. Just upriver from the dredger, a few barges rested against a wharf. There were overturned canoes and even a few small sailboats sharing the riverside with the trim barges, baby versions of the huge transports Valentine saw from a distance on the Mississippi. Anka told him a little about the settlement. Though all of Omaha and its surroundings passed to the Grogs, the Golden Ones and Grey Ones still needed to trade, especially for tools and weapons. They invited a few humans to set up house, giving them protection for activities that were outlawed elsewhere in the Kurian Zone, and a little patch of land next to the riverside fields and C-shaped lake. The black marketeers flourished, and as the Quisling Society in Iowa and parts of Kansas grew, they became semi-legitimate, even in the eyes of the Kurians. Old Omaha had no walls. Once past the reeking piles of trash and the masses of feral cats sleeping in the sunny, blown-out doorways and windows north of the wharf, Anka led Valentine to clean cobblestone streets. Every windowsill and rooftop supported a garden. Goats and calves grazed in open lots. The animals were marked with splashes of dye.
The traders here run houses. When I came here, there were three. I am told it has been that way for years. The three tolerate each other, but no more. They share the common land, but mark their animals. The gardens on the land of the house are their own. They tell me there are groves across the river for apples and cherries and chestnuts, but I have not been there to see how they divide it.
Men, most of them armed with gun belts, lounged here and there on the corners. Some rose from benches and made a show of standing in the sidewalk, so Anka had to step into the street to pass.
You just take that crap?
It is easier to receive an insult than a bullet.
Valentine saw the wisdom in that, but it still irked him.
Which house do you wish to try?
House Holt. For the most part, they were good friends with the Golden Ones. It is run by the big man.
What's he like?
Valentine wondered what to expect. He hoped it wasn't an Omaha version of the Duke in Chicago, alternately bluff and frightening.
He was always even-handed to me, though not friendly. He looked always to the future. I admired him for thinking and speaking in terms of decades rather than days.
Not many can afford to do that.
Here is his insignia. It hangs outside his house, and his men carry it as his token.
Valentine looked at the sign. He'd seen broken versions of it here and there. It was circular, green and white and black, featuring a serene long-haired woman surrounded by stars. Above the projecting sign on the second story, fans set in the window turned behind inch-thick iron bars.
Electricity here?
Yes. The three houses shared the maintenance of a coal generator. Long ago, I tried to get them to put one in for the Golden Ones. I failed.
As they approached the door under the sign, a man next to the door rose from his seat on a wooden locker and put his hand on his pistol. He had long hair and a longer stare.
What's your business?
A meeting with your executive.
You let your grog do your talking for you, kid? Usually with you black flag types, the man's the mouth and the grog's the muscle.
I'm the bodyguard.
That's so. Put your weapons in this box, and I'll let you in. Whether you see the big man or not will be up to him.
Anka gave Valentine a nod. The warden opened the box. Anka leaned his captured rifle against the door jamb. The gun was too long to fit inside. Valentine placed pistol, paré, sword, and claws within, and covered it with his bedroll and submachine gun. The warden shook his head.
More iron doesn't make you more tough, kid. I gotta check your pockets and pat you down. Now, anything sticks me, we'll float you back to your general on crutches. Anything else?
Valentine removed a short clasp knife and tossed it in with the rest. It wasn't much of a weapon anyway.
Clean now. Enjoy.
The warden searched both of them from head to foot.
Strangers call.
Opening for strangers.
An older man, white at the temples, wraparound sunglasses worn against the glare outside, lowered a shotgun when he saw Anka.
Anko! It's been years!
Valentine was glad he looked genuinely pleased. The man nodded to Valentine, then shook Anka's hand.
Thought you bought it in a big burn.
I've been in hiding, my Ian. Pleased to meet my new brother, David. You no longer run your route?
Ugh, the routes are drying up, even north. Those of us who still want to draw food were carrying guns now. The general's given us a squeeze.
Then perhaps we can do business. We wish to see the big man about the general.
Ah, lost cause. That rat's got muscle from here to KC. Keeps trying to get us to come on base, wear his damned cross. Doesn't sit right with me. Lots of us going down there just to salute and put new heels on Reaper boots. This is house talk only, but anyhow, the big man says that's the only alternative to just pulling up and leaving for God knows where. He's down to trying to get us a good deal and keep us off base.
Within 15 minutes, they were speaking to the executive of House Holt. The big man wasn't big, or even of average size. Valentine guessed him to be about 4 feet 9 inches and a bantamweight to boot. He had lush black hair falling back from the crown of his head to his thick beard, an open-necked shirt, silver-buckled belt, and cuffed pants over pointed-toe boots. He was bow-legged and pigeon-chested. Valentine guessed his age to be mid-40s. When Valentine was training to be a wolf, he heard a senior wolf talk about a generation the veteran called the Children of Chaos. In the years of what the Free Territory called the Overthrow, many babies were born underweight and malnourished as a rule, and in the tumultuous years that followed, they never had a chance to catch up. Valentine had known only a few from those hard years, compact-framed like the man before him, but generous spirits. Extreme hardship, it seemed to Valentine, had polarized that generation to extremes of magnanimity or selfishness. Valentine hoped for magnanimity. Their host stood at a window on the third floor, surveying Old Omaha from a floor-to-ceiling window, the layered panes somewhat distorting the view. He stood resting against a chair. The chair and its mate sat to either side of a wooden chess table, with gold and silver pieces arranged on the board and beside it. The office was opulently furnished around an immense wooden desk and bookcase, but it seemed crammed with everything from statues to rugs to paintings to vases and urns, rather than arranged, especially when compared with Roland Victor's in Kansas. The corner nearest them, separated from the big man by a folding screen, was occupied by a squint-eyed assistant. She wrote in a ledger resting upon a drafting table. The big man's burled desk had nothing on the top except a lamp and a leather blotter.
Anka, what brings you and your bodyguard to my house?
My compliment on your promotion. What became of the big man?
Ravies. Some rats they'd released. I suppose on the Ozarks to the south, made it into one of our barges. Bad luck. He was checking incoming cargoes and stuck his hand into a bag of rice without wearing gloves.
You took the name along with the executive title?
Sort of a joke. I don't mind.
The big man walked around to his desk and sat down. He moved stiff-legged with the aid of a pair of canes. The canes disappeared as soon as he sat.
Shall we leave right now?
Without introducing your friend?
His name is David.
The big man swiveled his gaze to Valentine.
I should explain. Anka and I have had our differences in the past. I didn't care for our house trading weapons with his kind.
He looked at Anka.
I accused you of eating human babies, as I recall. 10 years ago, anger tended to get the better of me. Anger that had nothing to do with the Golden Ones.
For my part, I challenged him to combat. Aggravating insult with greater insult.
Was there a duel?
No. Calmer heads interceded. Unless you wish to take up the challenge?
Anka closed his eyes, opened them.
No.
Valentine felt some of the tension seep away.
We need your help. House Holt's help.
What do you offer? We're traders, smugglers to some, quislings to others. I saw you take off a wolf parang.
My company was destroyed this spring.
The truth, even shaded, was preferable to a plausible lie.
Our request is unusual.
January, please get our guests some sandwiches and lemonade.
The woman behind the screen slipped out.
Lemonade?
Valentine stepped over to the chess set.
Thanks to the Kurians. They grow fine in some of the more sheltered parts of the Missouri Valley.
Valentine stared down at the pieces. The Gold King was in trouble. Nothing but a castle and a pawn protected him from a knight, two pawns, a bishop, and the Silver King.
Do you play?
A little. My dad taught me. I used to play it with my adopted father. Neither of us were very good.
Do you see a way out for the Black King? I'm trying for a draw.
Black meaning the Gold One?
Yes, sorry. Convention requires black and white, no matter what the color of the pieces are.
Valentine looked. Thought.
No. I think mate in three moves.
Two. The king can attack.
How about a game? While we have the sandwiches.
Their host looked eager again.
You're the guest. White or black?
Silver.
Valentine moved a pawn. 8 moves later, behind leaping knights, the black queen came forth.
Checkmate.
Valentine shook his hand.
What's the general to you, executive? An enemy bishop? Or your king?
The big man rested his chin on his cane.
An opposing king. I give him tribute, barges of food. He'd rather I were one of his pieces. My position isn't that different from the way the pieces were before our game, though I don't have a castle. Just 3 floors of odds and ends.
The sandwiches arrived, pulling Anka from an examination of oil paintings in dusty frames.
January, I won't need you for a bit. You can go home for the afternoon if you wish.
Valentine saw a look pass between them.
It's all right. I'm perfectly safe. They're not twisted cross.
He began to put the pieces back in their starting positions.
Care to switch chairs for the next?
This time, the big man's silver bishops eviscerated Valentine like a pair of dueling swords. Checkmate in 11 moves.
What did you come here for?
Guns for the Golden Ones. Explosives.
Valentine and the big man switched chairs again.
My people would use them against the Twisted Cross.
I'm only crippled physically, Ankar.
Valentine moved his queen, taking a knight.
Southern Command would help too. Perhaps in a few months we could have bear teams up here. You know what they are, don't you?
A kiss and a promise. I'll believe it when I see the teams. Besides, I don't have that much time. The general has given me an ultimatum. Join, leave, or be burnt. Your move.
Valentine saw it coming this time. The big man had sacrificed a knight to draw out his queen. He lost a bishop, and then...
Checkmate.
Let's play again. No switching chairs. I like silver.
Very well.
This time, they were silent. Valentine lost a knight, and when the bishops came forward again, his pawns occupied them until his queen had space. She took a castle, a pawn, and a bishop before falling. Then his castles came forward. The big man wrinkled his brows and moved a knight back. Valentine sent a bishop forward, took a pawn, lost his bishop, and brought out his last knight. Valentine checked. The big man moved his king, a smile on his face.
Checkmate.
The big man offered his hand.
My compliments. I saw two moves ago but went through the motions. You deserve the gratification.
Valentine arranged the pieces the way they'd been when he first approached the table.
Sir, in your quest for a stalemate, suppose you could have gotten that pawn to the white side and converted it.
Unlikely.
Suppose the unlikely happened.
Reliance on the improbable is a bad strategy.
Even so?
Ankar's ears pointed forward, listening.
The whole balance would change. I could get the draw. Depending on the white bishop, I might be able to squeeze a victory.
If you got enough arms to the Golden Ones, in the ghetto, on the base, that lonely pawn could become a terrible weapon.
No. I won't put my house's future in jeopardy.
Ankar's ears drooped as he stood.
Thank you for the sandwiches. I am glad we have put the past behind.
The big man nodded.
Good luck with your own future.
What there is of it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for the game. I haven't been beaten in years.
Valentine and Ankar went to the door and opened it.
David, a bit of advice. Practice the tried and true. You'll win more often. The intuitive player can be brilliant, once in a while even beat the best. But most of the time, you'll lose.
The cat nodded. The big man returned to his board. Valentine left a crack in the door and looked back through it. The big man wrinkled his brow in thought, then pushed his golden pawn forward.
So much for explosives.
Ankar looked at the sky.
There is one other place we could try. It's only a few blocks away.
A different trading house?
None of the others deal in anything but hunting rifles.
Then what?
The general's building where Kai Hefel now rules. It lies behind the walls that imprison my people.
From what might have been a corner office within the skeleton of a high-rise, Valentine looked across central Omaha at the ghetto of the Golden Ones. Flat on his stomach, he leisurely surveyed the quarter of the city's ruins allocated to them. Behind the old library, now the residence of their usurping chief and his Twisted Cross shield, were the twin buildings Valentine knew to be home to the dank farms of Heartroot, of which Ankar rhapsodized, and home to Omaha's captive Golden Ones. Ankar said the lower floors and stairways of the building were sound, though the walls and windows had been blasted out by the overpressure of nuclear explosions. Many Golden Ones lived on the structurally intact floors in a warren of partitions and rebuilt rooms, complete with a gravity plumbing system that Ankar claimed to be the wonder of Omaha. The Twisted Cross added on some changes. Piles of rubble topped with cemented-in broken glass formed walls all around the Golden Ones' quarter. Their new principal elder insisted on this measure for the safety of his people. An-Ka maintained that the wall did a better job of keeping Golden Ones in than their enemies out, a belief supported by the slapped-together wooden guard towers that stood both inside and outside the wall. Valentine guessed the whole area to be well over a square mile in what was once downtown Omaha. As An-Ka described, there had been a thriving population of Grogs controlling the heart of the city, but even in their reduced space behind the walls, the ghetto appeared far from crowded.
I don't see many of your people. A few working in the gardens, some more clearing that field of rubble to the northwest.
Every day a train comes through the rail gate in the south. My clan is great builders. Your Twisted Cross needs them in the old base south of the city. Those who wish to eat adequately get on the train. They serve soup and bread for those who work. They even keep some of my people in pens on his base.
Hostage taking. The general likes the tried and true as much as the big man.
Once the Golden One who traded profitably or spun the best poem chant or threw the sook most accurately at sport was considered a great one. Now, it is the back that moves the most dirt.
Have you been back inside since all this happened?
Yes, brief trips. It is dangerous. But I have met many times with those who sneak out for trade and to hunt. My people are good engineers. They open a new hole as soon as another is blocked. It is a dangerous business, especially at night. The Hooded Ones of the Twisted Cross see through walls, sometimes under the ground.
Seeing isn't the right word. An energy that a sentient being creates, called an aura, is something they sense.
I heard of this, but I thought it was a tale to frighten us. The general's men roam outside the walls at night. During the day, my people are under the eyes of the guards in the towers. Some are men, some are gray ones, some are Kaihefel's lickspittles.
Valentine, his eyes still to the binoculars, broke into a smile.
You are well read, An-Ka. I don't think I've ever heard the word lickspittle spoken in my life.
I grew to love your language, my David. It has little logic or music to it, but there are some fine phrases.
Agreed. My engineer sergeant, when I served in the labor regiment, he had some fine phrases. No logic or music in them either, but he got his point across.
Foremen are the same everywhere.
You said you had a plan for getting us inside. What do you have in mind?
We cannot go over the wall. There are many obstacles, traps, and noisemakers. During the day, we would be seen. At night, the Hooded Ones could sense us. That leaves only two other ways in. The first seems less risky on the face of it, but involves a good deal of luck. I know of two tunnels in, but my information is months old. As I said, they do find the tunnels. We may get below ground only to learn it is bricked up, or it may appear clear, but have explosives placed all around to kill us and close the tunnel at the same time. The second way requires more daring. Both the rail and the city gate are guarded by humans, those in the lowest ranks of the Twisted Cross. To them, every Golden One looks alike. There is only rarely a Golden One on sentry duty. More often it is gray ones. I could march in as one of Kaihefel's lickspittles, as you like this word so much, with you under guard. We might get as far as the clan hall. There, however, Kaihefel's bodyguards do stand sentry duty, and they would recognize me.
How big is his bodyguard?
There are 12 or 15. Three always attend to him, standing outside his door day and night. Another stands at the hall doors, and those off-duty gather inside the hall or near it. They are well-armed, for they fear my people whom they have betrayed.
The Great Hall has the weapons of the Twisted Cross.
Yes, the armory is there, under the supervision of this general's men. I understand they also have a small post on the other side of the river. They have done much work on the old base south of town. This general recruits artisans and technicians from many places. He covets more than just Omaha.
That's what I'm afraid of. From what you said, he means to destroy the lands I come from. He could succeed, given what I've seen. Southern Command is only just hanging on as it is.
You're just one man. Get back to the Ozarks with what you have. One man can't wreck the factory, but he can drop a wrench in the works. Southern Command couldn't get an expedition organized until next spring, if at all. And by then it could be too late.
Valentine had done some brazen things in his life. But walking up to a guard post with a well-spoken blood enemy holding a gun to his spine was the crowning act of audacity in his career. He dragged his feet down the cleared road through the rubble of what was once a wide thoroughfare with his hands over his head. At first, he asked Anka to move him along with the submachine gun.
No, my David, it would be noticed. The lowliest gate warden holds himself superior to my people and would take your weapon without thinking twice.
So they hid the PPD and Valentine's pack in the rubble of the building they used to observe the Golden One zone. Anka carried Valentine's sword, parang, and pistol in what had been Valentine's pack. The would-be prisoner's only weapons were his fighting claws. Evening shadows began to settle across the city, while a twisted cross non-com watched them approach with an interested air. He carried himself with the impatience of one who expects to be promoted to better duty. Valentine's ears picked up their conversation.
One of our valiant allies caught himself a real prize.
The corporal wore silvered swastikas on the sleeves of his gray overalls.
Wish they'd bring in a woman for a change, Corp.
The private, in an urban camouflage version of the same overall, looked at the approaching pair with disdain.
Wish for a promotion, then. The officers get the mistresses, the sergeants get the whores, and the rest get the shack.
Ain't it the truth, Corp?
As the pair drew up to the zigzag of barbed wire fencing blocking the gate in the daytime, the corporal stepped into the sun.
That's far enough.
The corporal cradled an assault rifle in his elbow. One of his eyes was set higher in his face than the other. As if to balance it, he kept the opposite corner of his mouth turned down.
What's this, soldier?
Darkhurst, railroad security, sir. I caught this man just this side of the old interstate on the south line. He was armed, sir.
The corporal turned back to the sentry.
Railroad security. Three meals a day to sleep under a bridge.
He turned back to the grog.
Good work to test. We like to see results for a change. Usually we get stories from your people about bandits dragging their dead away. Let's see that gun.
Anka pulled out Valentine's revolver and handed it over.
It was empty, sir.
The corporal examined the weapon.
I'm not surprised. Private Wild, you have any use for a .357?
No, sir. I know Ackerman is looking for a spare 9mm. Who wants a wheel gun anyway?
Those troopers are the only ones who carry that hardware. Dumb goat ropers. It's too scratched up.
The corporal spun the cylinder and worked the double action.
Be worth something if it were chrome, or at least stainless. This blued steel looks like hell after a few years.
Well, there's been a mistake, sir. I'm just a courier, but I have friends on both sides of the river. Both sides, sir. It would be worth something to the big man in the old market if I got back to him.
The low eye squinted on the corporal.
Listen, Mook. I'm not some hungry trooper or a marshal on the take. I'm chiseled out of stainless steel. Bullshit slides off me.
You're also so busy being superior, you're not asking the right questions.
This isn't worth the sweat I'm working up in this heat. D-Tess, this man's in pretty good shape. Running packs of contraband builds the muscles. He'll find them useful at the cave. Throw him in the hold for now. He'll go out on tomorrow's train.
The corporal returned to the little shed and made a note on a clipboard. The sentry moved aside half the wire barricade, and Valentine led Anka home.
Think about it, sir. Get in touch with the big man. Tell him Blackie's in the cuffs. He'll be grateful. And generous.
He'll do what he always does. He'll claim he's an honest businessman and say he's never heard of you.
Exactly what I'm counting on.
Anka marched Valentine into the Golden One's ghetto and turned up a lane that led up the hill to the library.
About one more hour until the work train returns. It will be dark then, and the Hooded Ones will be out to watch it unload. They always watch whenever great numbers of my people are together. We hide until then, my David.
They passed a row of houses built out of old cinder blocks and scrap metal. But these were no makeshift hovels. The Golden Ones worked with rubble like some artists did with broken glass, creating mosaics and patterns out of broken paving bricks and twisted structural steel. Older grogs, their fur had turned to gray-white, lounged in front on wooden chaises, chatting in their rumbling tongue.
In the store, quick!
Valentine complied. Anka pulled the curtain aside, and they entered the rude home. A white-haired grog looked up from his evening meal. He blinked his eyes twice, and suddenly his ears shot up. He spoke with Anka for several minutes in their native tongue, and the older one finally limped outside. Valentine watched out of the corner of the window, observing ghetto life from inside.
He is an old friend of my parents. He goes now to tell the others to pretend they saw nothing. Then he shall pay a call on another friend at the clan hall. Ah, here, my David, taste this.
Anka broke a tubular growth in half. It had a hole running down the center, as if it had grown around a spit. Valentine tasted it and found it pleasant, a little like pumpkin, with the texture of half-cooked pasta.
We used to dip it in honey, but there's no honey to be had these days.
Anka opened up a locker and began searching through folded clothes. He found a simple blue version of the robe kimonos the Golden Ones preferred to wear.
Not bad. Tastes kind of like spoon bread. I'd like to try it with molasses. What is it?
Oh, did I not tell you? This is heart root, the staple of my people. From nothing but dead growth, night soil, mud, and time, we get this. It grows year-round, as long as the water does not freeze, although much more slowly in winter.
He changed his torn and dirty old robe for the blue one he had selected. They passed the time talking about the former library and the probable location of the armory within. They waited until darkness and left at the banshee wail of the train whistle pulling into the ghetto. Valentine carried his revolver and sword, the former now loaded and in a holster at his hip, the latter strapped across his back under the black trench coat, with the hilt projecting out the loose collar behind his head. Anka still bore the .50 caliber, the gun carried mid-barrel in his right hand. The grog had Valentine's parang tucked inside the fresh robe. They traversed the common ground in the center of the ghetto, part cultivated garden and part parkland. Some sheep lay on the grass by a lily pad-filled pond. Anka stood very erect.
This way, my David.
The grog took him to a little clearing bordered by another grog shantytown. Valentine saw and smelled a latrine in the center of the field. Anka halted and, using his rifle as a staff, gazed out onto the meadow.
This is where they buried my people. When Kai Heffel took over, they dumped the bodies in a pit here. My parents were among the dead, along with the principal elder, many of my people who fought back, and those who just got caught in the battle.
Anka took off his mittened slippers and dug his long toes into the earth.
My wife and sons are buried here. I wish them to go with the 1 in 10 to Canada, but she refused to leave her family. 2,000 of my people rest beneath the soil. They say if you are very silent, you can hear weeping. At first, after the custom of you humans, my people planted flowers here, I am told. Then one day, after the walls rose, this general who accepts only submission or death came on an inspection. He saw the many beautiful flowers and ordered them pulled up. In their place, he dug pit toilets and ordered all to use them. The first, of course, was Kai Heffel, who always seems to find new insults to put upon those who had been his people. At one time, they would march the workers all the way from the train station to here at the end of the day. Golden One workers are not considered fit to use human toilets at the cave this general is building. They must go to the river bushes or wait until they return here.
I'm sorry. Never said you were married.
I play tricks on myself. When I do not speak of it or think of it, the pain lessens for a time. She was very beautiful, both in the looking and in the knowing. You own my apologies. I am speaking in English, but my private voice speaks in the golden tongue. Let me try again. She was very beautiful to look at and to know.
I'm sure she was. Although Valentine did not know the first clue as to how a grog measured physical beauty, he believed Anka.
My David, I am glad we could come here. I have only seen this place from afar. But we must hurry. We have business on the hill.
They moved among the wooded parkland up the hill to the old library. From below, it loomed above like a temple built to the specifications of a fortress. Valentine sensed a reaper somewhere within. A coyote or feral dog crossed their path ahead, head and tail both held close to the ground. A few Golden One couples could be seen here and there among the trees, the smaller females walking just behind the males, touching the backs of their partners.
Let's wait a moment, please.
The grog knelt and followed Valentine's gaze to the building. Valentine quieted his mind. He felt his body relax. The Reaper came into focus. It was below ground.
Are you all right, my David?
Yes, now I am. One of your hooded ones is in there.
You smell it?
Valentine would explain another time.
Something like that. You said you had a plan for getting in?
Valentine looked at the stoutly barred and shuttered windows around the first floor of the building.
My father's old friend knows one of my people on Kai Heffel's staff. She hates the new principal and gives news to my people when she can. She has arranged to unlock the shutters on one of the windows on the second floor after the guard checks it. It is very dangerous for her. It means she must remain in the building all night. The windows on the second floor are not barred, for the climb is thought impossible.
Then how are we going to get up there?
The grog pointed at a flagpole in front of a long, low building, just to the right of the great hall.
We shall use that.
Valentine looked up at the flag of the Twisted Cross hanging limp in the night sky.
Don't tell me that's the barrack for the Twisted Cross soldiers.
Yes, it is.
That's quite a risk.
Valentine checked the view of the guard at the Great Hall. Kay Heffel's soldier wore padded leather at his shoulders, shins, and forearms, and a helmet cut to accommodate the flexible pointed ears. He could not see the barrack.
There is no sentry in front of the barrack.
No. The Twisted Cross close up tight in the evening.
They avoided the Golden One sentry, standing outside the main doors of the ex-library, now the Golden One Great Hall, and moved around the side of the building. Valentine took a long look and listened. Satisfied, he slapped Anka on the arm, and they dashed across the cracked cement sidewalk. The grog made so much noise running, Valentine found himself wishing in vain for the absent Duvalier.
Is she on her way back to the Free Territory? Waiting at the rendezvous, cursing me every hour on the hour?
How many of these hooded ones are there in the ghetto?
No one knows. The number seems to vary. On some days I've been told as many as 30 will be here. They use our lands for a base to operate elsewhere in the city. Perhaps training, perhaps subjugating another clan.
The Reaper hadn't moved. Valentine hoped that whatever was occupying it would keep its attention for another few minutes.
Here goes.
They jogged up to the flagpole.
Put up by humans, not by the Golden Ones.
Anka placed both hands around the pole.
Now, to pretend this is the neck of Kai Heffel.
His muscles bulged and tightened as he first pushed the flagpole, then pulled it. Valentine kept watch for a moment, and then decided it was pointless. They were so in the open. If they were seen, it would be all over anyway, so a few seconds' warning would make little difference. He got on the opposite side of the flagpole and began working with Anka, though he couldn't bring half the strength of the Grog's arms. When Anka pushed, he pulled, and then they switched. Soon the pole was rocking in its dirt. Anka wrapped his thick arms around the pole, hugging it as tightly as a constrictor taking a wild deer. With a mighty pull, he uprooted its concrete base. The Grog took the heavy end and Valentine the flag tip, and they managed to get it to the side of the building.
It's a good thing the Twisted Cross don't garrison your people properly.
Valentine's legs burned in protest of the load.
A few patrols in this area, we could kiss this project goodbye.
My people live in abject fear of the Hooded Ones and a return of the flamethrowers, my David. They are worked half to death for their daily soup. They need little policing.
Anka wasn't even breathing hard, though burdened by the heavy end. If anything, he looked energized. They reached the base of the window, though not a crack of light showed from the supposedly unlocked shutters. The team managed a two-person raising of the Iwo Jima flag and carefully set the pole against the side of the building. Valentine winced at the thunk.
Wait here.
Valentine shimmied up the flagpole, wishing it were made of wood so he could use his claws. The shutter pulled open silently. He hopped down the ledge into a dark office, smelling Golden Ones. Its shelves were lined with paint and cleaning supplies, and Valentine could understand why a roaming guard might check its window only once as the sun went down. Hardly worth stealing. Duvalier might want the turpentine to make... burn the place down. It was a tempting thought, but Valentine turned back to the window.
Get rid of the pole!
Anka complied while Valentine wound and knotted a pair of canvas drop cloths. He soaked the canvas in a wash tub. Wet fabric would hold better at the knots and strengthen it. He wrapped the improvised line around his back, got a good grip, and sent his dripping line out the window for Anka. The Grog grabbed it and began to climb. Valentine had all he could do, legs braced and quivering against the wall under the window, to hold up his end of the job by not letting go as what seemed like half a ton of Grog swarmed up the line. The Grog made it through the window, his awkward rifle left outside. They opened the bag with Valentine's weapons. Valentine offered the Grog his choice of pistol or parang.
It'll be knife work if we have to fight in here.
Anka drew the parang and passed it, blade out, between his lips. The Golden One's eyes blazed. Valentine heard a step in the hallway on the other side of the door. He put his fingers to his lips and pointed out the door. Anka's ears went up and forward, listening for the tread.
A Golden One.
Anka gave Valentine a reassuring nod and opened the door to reveal a more petite version of himself, without the pronounced canines, but with longer and more expressive ears. Valentine doubted he would even be able to generate the necessary sounds should Anka decide to teach him the Golden One's language someday. She passed two keys on a little metal ring to Anka and left as quietly as she had come. Anka closed the door.
She was hiding, waiting for us in the next room. Vayi has no business staying here after hours. She would be killed if caught. She asked for us to be sure to lock the shutters behind, just in case.
He showed Valentine the ring.
The keys are to an iron gate at the basement stairs. For our cleaning people to get in the basement, a Twisted Cross officer on duty must open it. She stole it from his office as he slept on duty. Not all are men of stainless steel, it seems.
The bravery of some of the people who lived under the Kurians never failed to humble Valentine. Kerr ruled through fear, intimidating their subjects into submission. But for some, after a certain point, even the threats of torture and death no longer work. These helpless people chose death, even welcomed it when it came, as long as they were able to strike some kind of blow against their oppressors.
Do I have that kind of courage?
But such thoughts did not help mask his aura. Valentine brought his focus back within himself, until his worries were a hard little crystal locked in his brain.
Anka, there's still a hooded one to deal with. I think it's somewhere in the basement. I'm afraid it'll sense or hear you coming. Would you be good enough to wait here while I deal with it, please?
Yes, my David. Whatever you ask of me. I would prefer it if it were something other than waiting.
You could get a bunch of rags together here and open a can of turpentine. We may have to start a fire as a diversion.
Anka nodded and began to pile some dirty towels in a janitor's bucket.
May your blade find your enemy's heart.
Valentine handed over his revolver. He half drew his sword, tested the edge with his thumb.
A reaper has two hearts, one on each side of his body. I go for the neck. They only have one of those.
Anka extended his fist, his long thumb up. Valentine smiled in recognition. The proportions were all wrong, but the thumbs up nevertheless heartened him. He threw the sword's harness over his shoulder, tightened the straps. He crept out of the storage room. A hall led down to a shadowed open area. Valentine could see a decorative rail looking out on the central atrium his companion described. Low-wattage electric lights cast patterns across the Golden One's renovated stone and woodwork overlaid on the older human design. Keeping on his belly, Valentine crawled down the hall toward the atrium. He paused now and then to listen, but while there were sounds of activity on the floor above, he could hear nothing near him. He crawled out to the atrium and slithered to the staircase. Look, listen, smell, and then down. On the first floor, he waited 2 full minutes in an alcove, feeling the rhythms of the sleeping building. The only sounds came from the guard room just inside the main door, where the off-duty Golden One guards were eating and talking. He smelled heartroot, a rich smell like carrots pulled fresh from the earth. Following Anka's instructions, Valentine made it to the staircase down without encountering anything other than vague noises from somewhere below. As he moved down the stairs, listening and using his nose, he identified the sound and smell of machinery. A generator whined somewhere in the bowels of the building, and Valentine picked up a faint medicinal odor, like disinfectant. The Reaper definitely moved near him now. Life or death depended on the cat continuing to sense it, and the Reaper being unable to read Valentine's life sign until he was too close for it to matter. A silent contest, like the old world books of submarines hunting each other in cold darkness. He waited until the Reaper was somewhere far from the gate door at the base of the stairs before employing the keys. Valentine noticed an alarm bell mounted on the wall just down the hall, next to a door with light and the sound of voices coming from it. A switch with a conduit pipe running up to the bell probably activated it. The door was wired, a detail perhaps none of the grogs knew. He thought for a long minute, but could not come up with a decent plan. That Reaper would not stay in the opposite corner of the building forever. It had to be done, and if it had to be done, it had best be done boldly. He unlocked both locks, his sword hidden against his leg.
No, I'm at the door! Want to get the alarm for me?
Coming.
A human in a white lab coat appeared at the door and absently turned the switch. Valentine threw open the door and covered the 10 feet of hallway in a single leap.
Hey!
Too late. He reached up to hit the red alarm push button, but Valentine's sword intercepted his arm, removing it from the elbow down. Mouth gaping, the man looked at the interesting phenomenon of his amputation as Valentine's sword point came up under and through his chin. Valentine withdrew the blade as he rushed around the corner and into the well-lit room. The only movement in the room was the slow spread of the woman's blood across the tiled floor. The remains of a meal sat on a table under dazzling spotlights. Stainless steel counters and white cabinets marked the room as a dispensary or examination room. There were medical supplies, bandages, and iodine-colored bottles and instrument trays available. Valentine saw machinery in the room beyond, but had no time to investigate. The scream was nearly as effective as the alarm. The Reaper was coming. Valentine hurried to the gate and locked it again, then stepped back into the dispensary, dragging the dead man behind. He readied his blade, holding it in his favorite stance like a batter at the plate just inside the door. He heard the Reaper's step in the hallway and listened to it pause as it saw the slain man's blood and the severed arm Valentine forgot to retrieve. Then it did something Valentine would not have believed of a Reaper. It turned and ran.
What the?
Valentine pursued, and Valentine had to slow in case it was waiting just around the corner. It wasn't. It was in a room off the hall using a tabletop radio transmitter.
Case Red! Post 12 calling a Case Red!
While the voice was that of a Reaper, something was wrong about the cadence, the urgency in the voice. It sensed Valentine, turned, slit pupils wide as screaming mouths, reflected Valentine's blade flashing for its neck. It ducked, slowly for a Reaper, meaning it took a full blink of an eye to crouch instead of half of one, which was half a blink too slow. A man in the urban camouflage of the Twisted Cross stood next to an overturned chair, frozen in shock at the sight of the Reaper's death. The communications center man reached for his pistol, and Valentine opened his stomach with a right-to-left slash. Valentine stood on the man's wrist and pulled the gun and pocketed it. Valentine tore the microphone off the radio. He unplugged the radio and cut the power cord. The swinging cord end reminded him of something. That something was connected with the woman in the lab coat he killed. An item she was holding. An IV bag just like the ones hanging above the machinery in the room behind the dispensary. Why did a machine need an IV bag? It all came together in a rush.
No!
Valentine flew back to the dispensary and into the room beyond. 12 oversized metal coffins were lined up on either side of the room, quietly humming with electric power. A 13th stood in the aisle between the two rows. They were wider and deeper than coffins, however. More than anything, they reminded Valentine of defunct tanning beds he once found while sheltering in an old-world strip mall. They had mysterious, unlabeled knobs next to telltale lights flickering on the side. He closed the metal door behind him and barred it, using a pivoting arm that swung into a receiver on the frame. From the lights and noise, Valentine determined that 7 of the oversized coffins were on and functioning. Each also had an IV bag hanging from a T-shaped rack above the machinery. Valentine went to the humming, blinking center machine and circled it. His ears picked up the sound of water being cycled through some kind of plumbing. A cabinet door-sized hatch was fixed to the top at one end. Not knowing what to expect, Valentine opened the hatch. Inside, floating in the water like a piece of wood, was a very pale, thin man with a bristling growth of beard. Wires attached all over the body with little flesh-colored cups concentrated on his shaven skull. A smell, both salty and rank, wafted out of the miniature pool. The man's green eyes opened in surprise, and Valentine looked into the confused gaze of the man who until a moment ago was animating a Reaper. How many years' service did he have in? How many people had his avatar killed while under his control? Did he climb out of the tank desiring to tear the throats out of victims, like the Twisted Cross man he'd met in Chicago, who'd been in the tank for weeks at a time? This was the reason the Reapers spoke to each other, as Duvalier observed, and killed with guns, wasting vital aura. The Twisted Cross were a weapon, combining the minds of human soldiers with the death-dealing bodies of Reapers. Valentine grabbed the man's neck and shoved him underwater to the bottom of the tank. The Twisted Cross master struggled against Valentine's grip, muscles that hadn't been used in days creaking, while a sensor of some sort on his water-filled coffin beeped. The man clawed against Valentine's face with long fingernails, and the cat turned his head away. Bubbles. The thrashing finally ceased, and the sensor added an outraged, high-pitched whine to the beeping. Valentine looked back down at the dead figure. His electrodes had come loose during the struggle, and under each one was a tiny tattoo of a swastika. Valentine turned off the annoying monitor machine. In the fresh silence, the crash that always came after a fight hit like a delayed fuse bomb, and it hit hard. Vomit made up of his heart root dinner poured into the salty water of the tank. But there was more to do. Valentine rinsed his mouth with a handful of the salty water from an unused tank and spat it back.
Finish this.
Minutes later, six more dead bodies lay in their individual tanks of now bloody saline solution. Somewhere, seven Reapers were wandering in confusion, bereft of the controlling intelligence of their masters. Valentine cleaned his sword with a spare lab coat and checked each of the other capsules to make sure they did not contain further Twisted Cross. He wanted to scream, to howl, to lose himself in a burst of activity, anything to push the last few minutes out of his mind.
Forget it. What you killed were not men. Not anymore.
Valentine wondered in a half-amused fashion if he were going mad. Had id and superego decided to launch a psychic putsch? He did not really care. Perhaps another symptom of insanity. He cocked the pistol and carefully opened the door. The basement was still empty as the tomb it had become. Valentine checked the main hall and saw Anka tearing at the cage door. He turned off the alarm. It refused to die, so he did the next best thing. Elsewhere in the building, it still brayed.
Whoa, easy on the metal. Twist it enough and it won't open. I don't want to be stuck in here.
I am thankful that you are well, my David. Did you find the armory?
The armory.
Valentine went to the door and opened it, legs rubbery, trying not to stagger.
Are you wounded, my friend?
Anka's ears pointed at him like the horns of a charging bull. The grog sniffed the nail marks on his face.
No, come on, let's find it. It has to be one of these doors.
They discovered the armory behind a steel door that was not even locked. The arsenal was not as well stocked as they had hoped. Automatic rifles and pistols, a few shotguns, some boxes of grenades and mines, and two flamethrowers. Valentine found a case of satchel charges, and there was ample small arms ammunition in cabinets and cases on the wall. Valentine looked in vain for bullets for his PPD and ended up arming himself with one of the Twisted Cross assault rifles. He filled his pockets with magazines. Anka selected a shotgun and a machine gun with a bipod at the front. He draped ammunition belts for it around his neck like a priest's vestments. The pair moved out of the armory and to the basement gate. Valentine placed part of his load at the base of the stairs and crept up them with Kalashnikov at the ready. Anka followed.
You cover the upstairs. I'm gonna try for the door.
The chattering sound of Anka's machine gun behind him spurred the cat on as he made it to the entry vestibule. The golden ones on guard had fled. Valentine slid open a wooden panel. In front of the hall, a group of golden ones crouched on the hill just beyond the concrete sidewalk. They wore the simple smocks of common laborers. Two more sheltered behind a defunct and overgrown fountain, wearing stained overalls. They had improvised weapons, iron bars, sledgehammers, and lengths of chain. Valentine lifted the heavy bar fitted to the double doors and unfastened the locks. He stepped out, tried to signal the golden ones to approach. They crouched and looked at him as if they expected him to open fire on them.
Anka, there's some of your people out front. I think they're ready for action, but don't know what to do. Let's switch. Talk to them.
Valentine ran to the base of the stairs and sighted his gun upward.
There's just one. You can't see him from the bottom of the stairs, but go halfway up and he shoots.
The grog went to the door and threw both the portals open wide.
Come now, my people! Our time is at hand!
He waved the gun above his head. Golden ones rushed in, brandishing picks and mallets. It appeared as though, without willing it, Valentine and Anka had started a revolt.
My David! Show my people the armory, I beg of you. I have business elsewhere.
Anka leapt up the stairs, three at a time. The example inspired some of his fellows to follow, despite their lack of weapons. A shot splintered the banister. The giant sprayed bullets up to the third floor. Valentine led them down to the little room, wishing it had three times as many guns. He handed over the automatic he had taken off the dead radio operator. The golden ones just took the guns and grenades and left the explosives, Valentine was happy to see. Nothing saps the will to revolt like accidentally blowing up a dozen of your vanguard. More and more Grogs gathered as the word spread. One of them, an oldster, missing a hand and eye, and with a pronounced limp, joined Valentine in handing out guns and the proper ammunition.
My friend, own eyes watched Hoodman drop dead. No gun, no hook. Gunman's watched their eyes, same, ran away. Now my people done Hoodman's?
I hope so. I don't know.
The last guns left in the hands of their new owners. Valentine followed the flood of straw-tinted muscle to the door. He could hear shooting outside. The old Grog grabbed him by the arm as he went out the door.
Careful, sir. I'll shoot you, maybe.
The Grog led Valentine to the door. In front of the old library, a bonfire had been constructed out of any wood the Grogs could lay their hands on, mostly in the form of railroad ties. Even now, pairs of what he recognized as females were carrying up more ties, adding to the blaze. Valentine heard shooting from the direction of the Twisted Cross barrack and saw further flames lighting the sky there. Guard towers on the other side of the wall were firing into the ghetto, but they were too far away for Valentine to tell whether they were achieving anything other than alerting every Grog in Omaha that something was seriously wrong in the Golden One Quarter. Valentine, feeling that events were now well out of his control, just lugged his booty from the armory to outside the library and sat on the steps to watch. The old Grog barked orders this way and that to hurrying youngsters, but if they paid attention to his words, Valentine could not say. He could see the ears on the Grogs, twitching this way and that in excited confusion.
My people were like that bonfire, my David.
Anka unexpectedly joined him. His machine gun was down to its last belt, and the Grog reeked like a sulfur pit as he kicked another of his kind, longer-haired and fleshier, before him.
Sit, dog.
Anka turned to Valentine.
The fuel was there. They just needed air and a spark. You provided both.
We provided both.
You provided both when you destroyed the Hooded Ones. That was the air allowing them to breathe. From what I am told, the Hooded Ones all dropped over unconscious at the same time. The spark came in this building.
Interesting. When a Reaper's tie is severed with its master, it acts on instinct. Dangerous, but not smart.
Ah, but that is when the master is still alive, is it not?
I don't know. Is this the esteemed Kai Heffel?
The wretch plucked at Valentine's pant cuff.
Sir! Sir! Take me to...
Anka wrapped his long foot around the prisoner's neck.
Silence! Yes, my David. Though my dream of revenge is not to be. It is... Well, it was a law of the clan that none of my people may kill except in battle or duel of honor. And he was unarmed. With this pretender brought low, I believe the old laws will be restored. His fate will be for the new elders to decide. Besides, he screamed for mercy. There is no triumph in killing such a one on his knees.
That's so.
Valentine doubted he would have been as charitable if his family had been buried under a latrine. Other Grogs came and strung Kai Heffel from the iron bars of his own palace, giving the general surrogate a good view of events. He hung from his wrists, crying as Grogs came to shout what had to be abuse.
He's right side up. Mussolini wasn't so lucky, Anka.
The mob surprised him with its restraint. It restricted itself to words, sometimes pointing and laughing. Humans probably would have set fire to him. He'd heard ugly stories from veteran wolves about what happened when towns changed hands.
This Mussolini, he once ruled your free territory?
Never mind.
Two more Grogs ran up to the bonfire, each with a huge kettle drum on its back. They were beautifully fashioned, carved so that the different woods and metals looked as though they'd grown together. A third Grog with a pair of club-sized drumsticks began to beat out a rapid-fire tattoo. The pounding rhythm gave Valentine a welcome primal thrill, heating the cold, sour ache in his belly. The drumming intensified until he felt the earth shake with the Golden One's stamps. Even the muzzle flashes from the distant watchtowers paused while the drums boomed. Then it slowed to a steady, ominous beat. The sound galvanized the Grogs. Without a word, they knelt and wrapped their weapons against the pavement, ears pointed up and out like the horns on a Viking's helmet. The drumbeat continued to intensify, and its tempo increased, as did the clatter of rifle butts hitting concrete. They tilted their heads back. Valentine took in the crescendo, and he trembled for their enemies.